Bound to the tree trunk, Art just stared at Brown Owl. He didn't defend himself or beg for mercy. That wasn't going to achieve anything but loss of respect from these men. The two guards stood on either side of the tree and watched him. As Brown Owl walked away, Art thought back to his visit to St. Louis and Jenny. He thought of Mr. Ashley and their business arrangement, how he liked and respected the man for his seeming honesty. He remembered the great General Lafayette, who had visited the city to a warm greeting by the citizens and the town fathers. Then he remembered again the itinerant preacher who had been moving among the crowd down at the waterfront. Art almost smiled as he remembered the scene and how the preacher had held him riveted, wondering if the man were crazy or just on fire with the word of the Lord.
Crazy. The word of the Lord. Oh.
An idea began forming in Art's head.
Hallelujah! 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 Oh, sweet baby Jesus, come to me, Lord! Come to the 80-year servant who has wandered in the wilderness for 40 days in search of your righteous blessing upon him. Deliver me, O Lord, from the hands of my enemies, from the clutches of the devil himself, who has blasphemed your name. Release me from the bond.
The two guards were startled by their prisoner's words, but they were also mesmerized by him, by the outpouring of the rhythmic chant-like prayers and proclamations.
That king who would have him devoured by the lions. Oh, Lord, you sent hellfire and brimstone upon the evil cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, who had raised up the devil to worship instead of the Almighty. And their evil deeds, oh Lord, they made a stink that could be smelled all over the world. P.U. And you sent the plagues upon the Pharaoh, who would not let your people go. So the water turned to blood, and then there was frogs and locusts and skeeters and death of Egypt's cattle and boils on feller's skin and beasts, and the hail fell from the sky. Darkness fell all over the earth, and then the death of the firstborn of Pharaoh. Heavenly Father, you have the power to make right what's wrong and to set free the unjustly imprisoned, namely me.
In the morning, Art was still preaching. He had not ceased all night long. He was amazed that he had the strength to stand and to preach throughout the entire night, although his Bible stories were becoming a tad embellished as time went on. Throughout the village, all the people were talking about this astounding man. Everyone knew the story of the grizzly bear and Art's trek across miles and miles of the Badlands, even though he was nearly dead. Over time, it would become a legend among the Blackfoot. But now, it was still a freshly told story, and the man who would accomplish these feats was still among them, a prisoner tied to a tree near the council lodge. Like most of the village, Brown Owl had gotten very little sleep through the night. He made sure the guards were replaced, and each time he came to the tree where the prisoner was bound, he heard his ceaseless preaching. He had never heard a white missionary preacher before, but he had heard about him from others. Over the years, black-robed priests and black-coated preachers had come among various tribes to try to convert them to their strange religion. They were called Christians, and they taught that the Indians were bad for not believing the same things that they did. Now, in the time of false dawn, the young Blackfoot war chief stood with the other people of the village and listened to Artur's strange and magical words.
The Lord shall show portents in the sky! And
whatever the hell Art was saying, it sounded frightening and powerful to every Indian who heard him. He stood as straight and tall after several hours of preaching as he had when he had first been brought to the tree and bound there. His eyes were dark and glittery, as if he were under a spell. And in fact, he was possessed by a powerful spirit, the spirit of survival.
False prophets, they will call him B-I-N-G-O. Bingo was his name-o. But all who call on the name of the Lord will be saved.
He kept talking, kept preaching, letting his voice roll out with the word words had tumbled back into his mind from the times when he was a child and his parents dragged him to church services and traveling preachers' revivals.
Now why don't you proclaim this among all the nations? Prepare ye for war!
As the sun rose into the sky, Art preached without stopping or faltering. The people of the village, men, women, and children, all came to the tree and stood and listened to him. All of them heard him, though they didn't understand one damn word of the strange white man's language. The elders of the village huddled in an impromptu council nearby and whispered among themselves. They were amazed and concerned about this man, wondering whether he was a white devil who had come among them to destroy him.
And lo, tomorrow and tomorrow we'll creep into this petty place from day to day, and the sun and the moon.
Throughout the morning, women and children gathered around the tree where the man was bound and listened to his strange words. They talked among themselves, saying they thought he was crazy, that is, touched by the Great Spirit who created and protected all things. Buffalo standing in the river met with the other elders in the impromptu council. They watched and listened to Artur, shaking their heads. They decided to call a full-fledged council meeting. Buffalo Standing went to Brown Owl's teepee. There the younger man sat with his wife, who had been among the women listening to the prisoner preach throughout the morning. It was nearly noon, nearly time for the prisoner to be killed.
Owl, my young friend, the men of our village must meet to discuss what we are going to do.
The decision has been made. He is to be killed today. He is an enemy of our people.
Yet he spoke of peace to many before Wakthago came and told us we must fight him. And now we hear him speak and we think he is crazy. If this is true, he is under the protection of the Father and Creator of all.
Be inhabited forever.
Buffalo Standing led the young war chief to the council teepee where the others awaited. A pipe was lit and passed from man to man. Each one spoke his heart about this situation. All agreed that the prisoner should not be killed, that he should be released because he was clearly crazy. It finally came turn for Brown Owl to speak.
The words of my brothers ring true. Although I have seen this man Artur in battle and know that he is a skilled fighter, I see also that he is touched by the Great Spirit. We must honor the Spirit by letting him go.
One by one, they rose and filed out of the teepee.
Even the bravest of the bravest of them there fellas is gonna
outside, the elders and warriors gathered by the white prisoner. Brown Owl stepped forward.
Untie him.
Black dung from soap.
Art stopped speaking for the first time in nearly 18 hours. His mouth was parched and sore, and he staggered, and he had to steady himself by holding on to the tree. His vision was blurred, and he blinked to gain clear sight of all those who were gathered around him. At first, he didn't even understand what was happening.
Artur, you are free.
Others stepped forward and gave Art a blanket, his own hunting knife, and a parflesh of food.
You are free to leave us, for you have the protection of the Great Spirit. Do not come back to make war with our people, or else we will fight you, and this time, we will kill you.
Art took the gifts that were offered. Without a word, he walked away toward the east, away from the village. He wondered if Dog was out there somewhere waiting for him. His head still swam with words, but he was glad as hell to be free.
And now I'm gonna find my men, come hell or high water.
Percy McDill had kept the Trapper's Party together, but through curses and threats rather than true leadership as Art had done. Along with Cavanaugh, he bullied and cajoled Matthews, Montgomery, and Hoffman to stay with him when they threatened to split up and go their separate ways. He practically had to kill Hoffman early on to keep him from going back to check on Art. The Hessian was certain that McDill had done something underhanded. And the others were too, though they didn't talk about it among themselves. That had been about 8 weeks ago. Now, McDill led the men back to the temporary tent town where they had been in August, the settlement that was maintained for fur traders and trappers where the mountain men stop to resupply and get drunk and spend a few hours with some women. The tents, the sod huts, and the few hastily erected log structures were the same. Well, to tell the truth, there may have been one or two more of each. And there were whites and a few Indians and mixed-breed children living there. There was a smoky, greasy pall over the whole encampment, a sense of impermanence and death. McDill led the party into the settlement, coming from the opposite direction, the west, and he met the stares and quizzical looks of the mountain men who happened to be there. The big man didn't want to admit to anyone, including himself, that his leadership had been a complete failure. His party had precious few pelts to trade, too few to bring back to St. Louis. This was because he was not an expert trapper, because he had not been able to stay in the mountains through the winter season where the furs were at their best, and because he wouldn't make alliances with any of the Indian tribes they had encountered on their journey after they left Ark to die. And his henchman Cavanus was not very good either. The others were too green to know the ways of the wilderness well enough to salvage the mission. They knew that McDill was a lousy peacemaker, unlike Art, but they said nothing. They had decided to stick together rather than split up for the winter, and they went along with McDill's decision to return to St. Louis before the weather got too cold. So, as they rode through this ramshackle excuse for a town, they were a pretty bedraggled, dispirited bunch. They had lost their original leader and hadn't recovered from that. Despite McDill's bullshit, they all knew it. McDill led them to a trading tent where they offered their paltry supply of pelts, very few and not very good, for sale to finance their trip back to St. Louis. He tried to demand the best price, but had to settle for much less. He kept all the money.
I'm boss of this outfit, and I'll take care of the money.
Behind the others' backs, he looked at Cavanus and winked. He'd take care of his friend, and the others could go to hell as far as he was concerned.
We're only going to stay for a day or two here, rest up, and buy some supplies for a ride back to St. Louis. Let's find a place to camp for tonight.
They walked their horses and gear over to a small clearing on the edge of the makeshift town. There was another two-man camp nearby with a campfire burning, the men sitting on a fallen tree trunk and tending the fire. There was a pot of coffee cooking in the fire. McDill ignored his neighbors.
Hoffman, Matthews, Montgomery, you guys set up the camp.
Cavanus and McDill set about unpacking some of their own supplies, paying special attention to the whiskey bottle. After a while, one of the men from the neighboring camp came over to the larger group.
You all are welcome to some coffee if you want.
Maybe later.
I'd like some.
Now look, Montgomery, I told you we need to stick together here. We'll fix our own supper.
Just trying to be neighborly, friend.
He met you before. You are friends of our captain, Art.
That's right. We did meet before. I'm Jeb Law. This here's Ed.
Jeb pointed to the other mountain man with whom he was sharing the camp.
Art used to be our captain. He's dead now. I'm the leader here.
That so? Well, y'all are welcome to some coffee and grub anytime.
Jeb returned to his own campfire. A little while later, Matthews and Montgomery did drift over to Law's campfire and sat down to drink a cup of coffee, first they'd had in many weeks. Then the Hessian, Hoffman, came over, and finally, even McDill and Cavanus gave in and came over, bringing their own drinking cups.
We heard you men ran into some trouble out there in the upper Missouri.
We're doing fine, Jeb. We did lose poor old R. He got mauled by a big grizz. It was painful to see him all beat up like that.
That so? He was dead when you left him?
Yep. Well, he's on the run from some Indians. Fought him off pretty good, but we had to keep moving fast.
Matthew shifted uneasily where he was sitting.
No, he was not dead. He was hurt badly. We left him with his rifle and food. We don't know what's happened to him.
Really? Well, now, I wonder if he's the one the Indians are all palavering about for the past months or so.
What do you mean?
There's a man they're calling Preacher. The Blackfoot captured him. Seems he was wandering the country after he had been attacked by a bear. He had nothing except his knife and a buffalo robe that he made himself. I guess he killed the buffalo to get it. Anyhow, now the story is the Indians caught him and brought him back to their village to kill him. But he started acting crazy-like. Started preaching like from the Bible. He didn't stop talking for almost the whole day. Well, sir, seems like the Blackfoot couldn't bring themselves to kill him. They let him go and started calling him Preacher. Sounds an awful lot like my old friend Dar.
McDill looked at Cavanus. It was just about sundown and the shadows were long and dark, but McDill's face was white like the moon. He and Cavanus got up and left the campfire. The others stayed and drank more coffee, and even ate some supper with Jeb and Ed. They pumped Jeb for all the information he had heard about Art. They were happy to learn that their old boss was alive and well. But the question in all their minds was, where was he now? In fact, Art had made his way back to the American Fur Company trading post on the river, commanded by Joe Walker. Along the way, he had bartered for a horse from a friendly Injun, so he was able to save valuable time by riding the last 50 miles or so. Already it was past the middle of October, and the days were getting shorter, the nights much colder. He had been reunited with Dog after his captivity by the Blackfoot. The wolf dog had remained outside the village, aware that his human companion was in trouble. He'd kept to the woods and brush throughout the day and night. And when Art had emerged a free man, he'd followed him for about a mile before showing himself. The young mountain man was glad as hell to see his canine friend, but he wasn't surprised. Dog had proven himself many times over as reliable and faithful. As he traveled, Art looked back on the events of the past few months. The primary mission was mostly a failure, though there had been some successful peacemaking along the way. Still, Art wouldn't have much to report to William Ashley besides his own adventures, which he could barely believe himself. Approaching the fort-like structure, he saw that, like before, the front gate was closed, and the blockhouse that overlooked the gate still appeared empty.
Who goes there?
I'm here to see Joe Walker. My name is Art.
Jesus, you again?
Yeah, I just keep turning up like a bad penny.
Minutes later, Art was in Walker's lamp-lit windowless quarters, talking to the bald-headed, bearded commander of the trading garrison.
You don't look too healthy.
Well, I've had some tough days recently.
So I hear, Preacher.
What'd you say?
I called you Preacher. That's what the Indians are saying. I just did some business with an Arikara scout who told me all about your captivity by the Blackfoot. I told you they were savages.
Well, they actually treated me pretty good, all things considered.
Art scratched his beard. He wanted to shave and clean himself up. He couldn't believe that Walker had already heard of his experience with the Blackfoot.
What else are they saying about me?
Well, there's something about a fight with the grizzly bear. Seems you won, but came out the worse for wear.
You're damn right. Pretty near killed me. She was a big mother bear with a bunch of cubs. I didn't mean to bother her.
She couldn't have known that, I suppose. So your men left you behind, wounded?
Well, they did what they had to do. I would have done the same if I was one of them.
And where are you going now?
I'm looking for my men. You remember them from when they came here in August? They've been through here?
I haven't seen them, but word is they're headed back to St. Louis. They don't have much by way of pelts.
What?
I don't know why, but they were seen moving east just a few days ago. Probably they'll head down toward the Platte for resupply, maybe do a little trading, then head on down the Missouri to St. Louis. I have dispatched a message to Mr. Ashley to tell him to expect them. Didn't know about you, though. I'll write him a letter to tell him I've met with you, and that you have a new name.
Well, if it's all the same to you, I'll tell him myself what happened to me in our expedition. I'm not sure what he's going to think about all this.
Well, I hear Mr. Ashley is a reasonable man.
Oh, yeah. I like him. He's got my respect.
Well, I wish you good luck, sincerely. And I know you'll be back out here. You've never been a city man. You belong out in the mountains, in the high plains. That's who you are now, son.
Well, I gotta keep moving if I'm gonna catch up with my men. If I move fast, it just might do it.
I have no doubt you will, Preacher. No doubt at all.
Jenny had made a decision. She was going back. Maybe not all the way to St. Louis, but she was going to take her girls out of this primitive place and back into something that resembled civilization. The settlement on the Kansas and Missouri rivers, called Westport or Kansas City, just beyond Independence, might be a good place to settle. But it was hopeless out here, even though she had come to like the few bedraggled men who were trying to make a go of the little settlement. It was getting close on to winter, so it was definitely time to move. She wasted no time in gathering her girls, reloading the wagon, and setting out, east this time. First, she would return to the trading settlement at the junction of the Missouri and Platte Rivers, and from there decide which direction to head next. It took 2 days of hard overland travel to get there. They rolled in near the end of the second day, the sun low in the sky. Jenny sat up front in the driver's seat with her old friend Ben. He hadn't questioned her decision to turn back east. In fact, he was glad she was doing it. It would be safer for her and the girls.
Look, Ben, this is a bustling community. There are even some women here. Most of them Indian girls, as far as I can see. A lot of trappers. I bet there's some money to be made here for a person of business.
It looks pretty rough, Miss Jenny.
Ben was right. The encampment was nothing much to look at. Tents and crude sod and log buildings. The men hanging around stopped as the girls passed and waved. No doubt about it, they were glad to see this particular train pull into their humble way station.
Look, there's some boats.
Jenny pointed at some keel boats along the river's shore.
We could take a boat as far as Westport. Maybe settle there for a while and see if we like it.
Sounds good, Miss Jenny.
They drove to one of the more substantial buildings, which was a fur dealer's headquarters. She found out that they could camp anywhere they pleased, that there were no authorities in this place other than the gun and the fist. They also found out that the trappers and traders and other men in the vicinity would be mighty glad to see them. McDill got drunk during his second day in the sprawling tent town. He spent a sizable chunk of the money that he had collected for the entire party's pelts. That left him with next to nothing to buy supplies, but he was too far gone by noon to give two shits anyway. He wandered the sprawling encampment looking for a woman. Any woman would do. He'd almost forgotten about the time he'd been here before and the trouble he'd caused by making a play for another man's squaw. But he hadn't forgotten how Art had sicked his wolf dog on him and how Dog had bitten his knife hand and humiliated him.
Should have shot that damn beast when I had a chance.
McDill staggered through the makeshift streets of the town, glassy-eyed and angry. This time, nobody was going to prevent him from getting what he wanted. He headed toward the center of the settlement, where the eastern fur traders had set up their frontier offices. A better class of people was living there, he had convinced himself. Maybe that meant a better class of woman. Putting his hands in his pockets, he realized that he had very little money left. He'd given Cavanaugh $10 off the top of their meager take just to keep his friend off his back. The others going to be mad when they found out he had spent all his money on liquor and maybe a whore.
Damn them all to hell anyway. They got out of this mess with their lives. There's more than that young Injun lover would have done for them. Like to get a scalp to this Injun palaver. If I hadn't been there on that island, I don't know what would have happened. Saved all their damn lives.
Percy McDill looked up and he couldn't believe what he was seeing. There, directly in front of him, were the girls from the House of Flowers in St. Louis. At first, he thought he was dreaming or maybe somehow imagining this sight. He had never gone into the famous House of Prostitution. The likes of him couldn't afford the fancy prices for fancy women. But he had hung out nearby enough to recognize a few of the faces and figures of these girls.
What in the hell are those pretty girlies doing way out here?
A jumble of thoughts clogged up his brain and he couldn't think straight. Couldn't figure out what was going on. All he knew was that he wanted a woman and, by God, here were some women. How lucky could a man get? McDill staggered forward. Art wasn't sure why, but something propelled him forward. He rode without stopping to sleep, only to rest and water his horse. Turned out the horse was a good bargain. It was sturdy and reliable and didn't seem to mind Dog tagging along for the ride. From Joe Walker, Art had obtained a rifle, shot and powder, a new canteen, and a new saddlebag for food and supplies. He was all set now, and with each mile he felt stronger, more determined to find the men he had once commanded. He hoped Hoffman, Montgomery, and Matthews were all right. He hoped McGill and Cavanaugh were healthy too, so he could enjoy even more beating the living shit out of them. Late in the afternoon of the third day out of Walker's Fort, Art rode into the tent city at the junction of the Missouri and the Platte. There was something familiar about the look and feel of the place, the men who populated it. They were his kind of people, men of the mountains. As he rode through, he got more than a few hellos and howdies. They looked at him differently, however. That dad-blasted preacher story must have gotten to them, too. He looked around for someone he knew well. He found what he was looking for. There was Jeb Law, his old friend. Art rode over to Jeb's campsite. The man looked up from his fire and broke out into a big grin.
Well, if it ain't my oldest and dearest friend and his pal Dog.
Yep. Art shook Jeb's rough hand.
God damn, look at you. You needing a good meal, son? Let me fix you up some beans. I got coffee cooking on fire. Take a load off feet.
Well, thanks, Jeb. It's good to see you, too. The two men sat. Jeb Law looked directly into the younger mountain man's eyes.
You come to the right place if and you looking for your exploring party. They're right here.
McGill and the others? Already calculated that they'd be well on their way to St. Louis by now. McGill didn't like to linger in places like this, especially since he'd gotten in trouble over a woman last time through.
Yep, they all come back in one piece.
Well, I'll be damned. Well, that's a good thing. Guess they didn't need me after all.
You should have seen the long hound dog looks of those men. They sure missed you. They thought you was dead.
McGill, he told them that, didn't he?
Sure thing. The others didn't like it one bit when they found out he had lied to them. Except in that one that's joining him at the hip. What's his name?
Cavanaugh.
Yeah, he and Cavanaugh are a pair of evil children if I ever laid eyes on any. But you're a sight for sore eyes, boy. Here, have some old Jeb's coffee. Best brew west of nowhere.
Dog sidled up next to Art and sat alertly right beside his leg. The coffee slid hotly into Art's belly, and he felt the effects of no food in 3 days.
I told them all about you being called preacher and all that. They were sure surprised.
Now, where the hell did you hear about that?
I hear things. Don't take long for stories to get passed around out here. You know that. And it was a pretty good yarn about how you killed a bear and wandered around wounded and got yourself captured by the Injuns. I said to myself, that sounds just like the Art I know. Sure enough, it were you.
Well, where are my men?
Why, they're camping right next door there. They must be out gallivanting around. McDill got himself drunk early on today. He's either passed out or dead somewheres round about. That one's got death marked on him. It ain't going to be long for him, I'll wager.
Art stayed and ate some of Jeb's beans cooked with a fistful of pork fat. He hadn't tasted anything so good since the last time he and Jenny had eaten together in St. Louis. His belly settled down, and his mind became more focused on what he had to do, find his men and reclaim his leadership. It wasn't going to be easy or pleasant, he knew that. Not with McGill and Cavanaugh fighting him every step of the way. Well, I better get moving before it gets completely dark. Thanks, Jeb. I'll be back.
I'll wager on that.
Art didn't know where to start, so he just walked into the center of the tent town. He ran into some other acquaintances along the way and stopped briefly to say hello. All of them seemed to know about his adventures, and some of them even called him Preacher. Dog tagged along with Art, never leaving his side. He avoided other dogs, faded into the background if any barked or challenged him. Like his master, he didn't want any extra trouble or distraction right now. The mountain man came to one of the fur dealer's buildings, a squat log structure chinked with mud and sod.
There were a couple of men out front stacking pelts. He asked about his men.
Oh, yeah, they're here. Their captain, McDougal, I think his name is, was around here earlier, drunk as a skunk. Sold us a few pelts yesterday. Not very good quality.
Uh-huh. Thanks. Art was close. He wondered if maybe he shouldn't just go back to the campsite and turn in for now and let them come to him. Percy McDill burst into Jenny's tent.
Hey, baby, come here.
He moved toward her, his face twisted by lust and anger into a grotesque mask. The candle's reflection in his dark eyes gave Jenny the illusion of staring into the very fires of hell. She stepped backward, but found little room to maneuver in the confines of the tent. Outside, Art heard the woman scream. It came from a nearby tent. It startled him, not because of the cry itself, but because he thought he recognized the voice of the woman who had screamed.
No, couldn't be. It couldn't be who I think that was. Could it? Well, shit, I ain't gonna stand here and guess about it.
Shut up, bitch!
In the tent, McDill lunged, clamping his dirty hand over Jenny's mouth. Jenny bit his hand and he ripped it away.
Goddamn wildcat, huh?
Jenny fought back, pummeling his chest and face with her hands, but he was so big and strong that it had no effect. She broke away.
You bitch. I was gonna pay you, whore that you are, but now I'm not. I'm just gonna take it for free.
Stay away! For your own good, mister. I don't wanna hurt you.
You don't wanna hurt me? Tell me, bitch, how exactly are you planning on hurting me?
Jenny gathered what composure she could and brushed a fall of hair back from her face. She forced herself to smile at him.
Look, you're right. A whoring is my business. But I was just getting ready for bed and I must look a mess. Why don't you go away now and give me a chance to get ready and then you can come back later.
No way, little lady. I'm here and here I am. You'll get to like me when you know me better, I promise.
You'll like me better if you give me a chance to get ready for you.
I like you fine just the way you are.
Help!
At that moment, the tent flaps open, and it was as if God himself had heard her plea. The one man in the world who she truly loved stepped inside.
Art!
Well, I'll be damned. If it ain't my old pal, Art. Only I hear tell the Injuns call you Preacher now. Is that right? You gonna preach to me, Preacher? You gonna save my soul?
No. I just thought I'd tear your goddamn head off!
Art scrambled to his feet and grabbed McDill by the collar. He dragged him outside. He wanted to take this confrontation away from Jenny. A large crowd immediately surrounded the two men. Among the people were Matthews, Montgomery, and Hoffman. They couldn't believe what they were seeing. Here was their leader returned as if from the dead. They were overjoyed to see him, but not in these circumstances. Art, still exhausted from his long ride and not yet fully recovered from all his injuries, stood still to catch his breath. That allowed McDill to get to his feet, and the big man charged like a bull. Art stepped out of the way, and McDill went hurtling into the crowd. The men in the crowd caught McDill and pushed him back into the circle of combat. The two men faced each other again, and Art swung as hard as he could. Nobody noticed Cavanaugh was watching with the others, nor did they see him slip away from the crowd, heading for his horse. He knew that if Art won, he might come after him. And if McDill won, he would want to know why Cavanaugh didn't help him. Under the circumstances, this was no goddamn place for Cavanaugh to be.
Art!
Jenny! Stay back! Keep out of the way!
As Art looked away from McDill for that quick second, McDill pulled his long-bladed hunting knife from its sheath.
Look out! He has a knife!
Art reared back to avoid the killing knife, then circled his enemy barehanded.
Art! Take this!
It was Hoffman. He tossed Art a stick. Catching it, Art used it as a defensive weapon, swinging it at McDill to keep him at bay. With one swing, McDill's knife chopped the stick in half.
What you gonna do now, preacher? You think that little stick is gonna stop me? I'll whittle it down to a toothpick. Now I'll carve you up.
Art realized he had no choice. He had to fight this madman on his own terms. No rules, any weapon at hand, and to the death. He drew his own knife, the same knife that had seen him through the past 2 months, from the killing of Wakatha Go to the killing of the grizzly she-bear, and through his wandering in captivity. The same knife that had been returned to him by the Indians when they granted him his freedom.
I should have killed you when I had the chance. You better start preaching your own funeral, preacher. It's time for you to die.
I don't think so, McDill.
I'm gonna kill you, and then I'm gonna gut that damn mud of yours.
The two men circled each other like gladiators in a Roman arena. Jenny, who watched in horror, could neither speak nor cry out. Dog stood at the alert. He could have attacked McDill, but somehow seemed to sense that this was something Art needed to do by himself. He swung his blade at Art, missing his face by only a few inches. Art felt the wind of the swift knife blade and jerked his head back. In almost the same movement, Art swung his own knife low and hard, aiming for McDill's belly. McDill dodged and punched Art on the side of his head. Art was stunned, and for a second he couldn't see a thing. He backed away quickly to avoid the oncoming McDill. As McDill shot past him, Art sidestepped and stabbed with his knife blade. It slipped into McDill's midsection. Art pushed the knife in as far as it could go, then held it there. The two men stood together, absolutely motionless, for a long moment. Art felt McDill's warm blood spilling over his knife and onto his hand. McDill pulled himself off the knife. He stepped back several feet.
You serious? Son of a bitch!
McDill came back toward Art. McDill dropped his knife and put his hand to his wound. Blood filled his cupped palms, then began oozing from his mouth as well. His eyes turned up in their sockets, showing the bloodshot whites.
God damn you!
He just might, but if he does, then I'll see you again in hell.
Jenny ran up and threw her arms around Art and kissed him. Art stood there unmoving, unable to take his eyes off the crumpled heap that had once been a man. Montgomery, Matthews, and Hoffman came forward, and Dog followed warily, his nostrils filled with the blood scent from the dead man. Matthews raised a hand to Art's shoulder.
Well, boss, good to see you again.
Yes, so good. You're alive. You saved my life. If you had been here, I don't know what might have happened.
Well, I'm glad that you're all alive and well, too. Where's Cavanus?
I think we will never see him again. I saw him sneak away like a dog.
Hey, now. Hold your tongue. You're going to hurt Dog's feelings. Well, shit. I guess we better clean up this trash and bury him.
I'll tell you, Art, that's more than he would have done for you.
Call me Preacher.
Preacher? Yeah, I heard you picked up a new moniker. That's what you want to be called, huh?
Yeah, that's what I want to be called.
Later that night, Jenny washed off the blood and trail dust that clung to the man who would now and forevermore be called Preacher. She coaxed him to eat some supper, then to sleep off the aches and pains of his long ordeal. She lay beside him the whole night. The next morning, Preacher set out early before Jenny awoke. Dog followed him to the edge of the settlement. Preacher rode toward the ford. He would cross the Missouri and ride back to St. Louis to report to William Ashley as he had promised to do. It seemed a long time ago since that last trip to St. Louis. A lot had happened, and he felt like a different man now. It was good that he had a new name to go with this new man. Maybe he'd grown up. He was still young, but he had been through more in the last few months than most men would go through in a lifetime. Dog, I want you to stay here with Miss Jenny. She needs you, and I don't. I'm on my own now. You understand what I'm saying, don't you?
Dog cocked his head and wagged his tail. At this moment, he looked more like a dog than a wolf. That was for sure.
Yeah, you too, dog.
Dog turned and slowly walked back toward the settlement. A lone rider, a man of the mountains who had left the only home he had ever known more than a dozen years ago, reined his mount around and headed toward the river. The man called Preacher was about to start a new chapter in his life, and he would be alone, as the men of the mountains always were. First Mountain Man 9, Preacher's Piece, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2003, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Ken Jackson, Nanette Savard, Christopher Graybill, David Coyne, Karen Carbone, Thomas Penny, Tim Carlin, James Konacek, Dylan Lynch, M.B. Van Dorn, Andy Clements, James Lewis, Eric Messner, Lily Beacon, and M.J. Casey. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. Musical score composed and performed by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Preacher's Piece, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Blood Bond, Eagles, and Last Gunfighter series, available from Graphic Audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Now keep listening for another hard-driving episode of Mark Dalton, Owner-Operator. It'll get you home.
Graphic Audio presents Mark Dalton, Owner-Operator. Book number 2, Reefer Madness and More Tales of the Open Road by Ido Van Belkin. Copyright 2008, Ido Van Belkin. Performed by David Coyne and the Graphic Audio Players. Episode number 4, Two for the Road.
The call came out of the blue, and the voice was all but a distant memory.
Hi, Mark. It's Jenny.
Jenny?
Mark couldn't believe it was her. They hadn't spoken in years, but here she was calling him up as if they'd talked every week. Unbelievable. Mark pulled Mother Lode onto the shoulder of the highway and parked it, just to be safe.
Yeah, it's me, Jenny. How's it going?
Mark looked down at the asphalt strip in front of him.
South. It's going south. What's up with you?
Well, I was thinking...
Yeah?
I was thinking that maybe we could try and, you know, get back together again.
Mark felt as if the world had been pulled out from under him. Back together again. To be honest, it had to be one of the furthest things from his mind these past few years. He'd been working as a private investigator, making a good living videotaping men who spent 3-hour lunches with their secretaries, and women who spent more time with their personal trainers than they did in the gym. The money had been good, but the work had taken up a lot of his time, especially nights and weekends. That became obvious to him when he set up his camera one night outside a motel room on the Scarborough Strip and discovered that the woman he was taping having sex just happened to be having sex with his wife. His wife, Jenny. And now, here she was wanting to get back together again.
Gee, I don't know, Jenny. I'm driving my own truck now, and to be honest, I'm kind of enjoying being out on my own.
Oh, come on, Mark. You're not even going to give me a chance.
A chance? How about $1 million also, you useless...
What's that, darling?
Oh, nothing. Kind of late for a second chance, isn't it?
Yes, it is late. But there's something missing from my life, and I didn't know what it was for the longest time. And then it sort of hit me all at once.
What did?
You were the thing that was missing from my life.
She sounded convincing, but Mark still didn't believe it. She'd never even talked this way before, even when they'd been dating. The thing she was saying now sounded, well, crazy coming from her.
You didn't seem to have any trouble finding other people to fill in for me whenever the mood struck you.
I was wrong to do what I did to you, and I'm sorry. You were a wonderful lover, the best I've ever had. And I didn't know what I had until it was gone.
That's nice to know.
If there's any way I could make it up to you, I'd be willing to do it.
Anything?
Anything.
Hey, it sounds really good, Jenny. And I'd really like to get back with you, but truth is, I don't want to give up what I'm doing right now.
Who says you have to give up driving?
What?
It didn't seem like her to say something like that. She was either a totally different person, or she was out to get something from him. He hoped it was the former.
I wouldn't ask you to give up driving for me, especially if it's something you enjoy.
I don't even want to settle down.
Well, of course not. If we got back together, I could even go out on the road with you.
You'd be willing to do that?
Of course, Mark. It would be a great way to spend some time with you, learn what you've been doing with your life. And our nights together would be pretty hot, don't you think?
You'd want to come on the road with me?
Yes. Couples do that all the time, don't they?
I don't know, Jenny. This is all so sudden. Maybe I should think about it.
Think about this. I'll make it worth your while.
Mark was reminded of a very different Jenny, lying next to him naked and damp with sweat and saying such sweet and sexy things in his ear. The decision was made. His head was telling him no, but his heart and his other head were saying, oh yeah.
Well, maybe we could give it a try.
Great. I could be packed and ready tomorrow if you like.
Packed?
Yeah. What time can you pick me up?
Afternoon, I guess.
Great. Just enough time for me to pick up something special just for you. Which do you prefer, white or black?
Black.
Okay. See you tomorrow.
Mark stared out at the highway in front of him, wondering what exactly had just happened. As best as he could figure, he'd either just started onto the road to greater happiness, or he just made one of the biggest mistakes in his life. Only time would tell. After delivering his load early in the morning, Mark called Bud around 10 a.m. and managed to get a truckload of bottled water headed for a grocery distributor in Winnipeg. Best of all, the delivery date was 3 days away, so he had enough breathing room to spend some time getting reacquainted with his ex-wife, Jenny. He hadn't meant to mention it to Bud, but somehow he'd let it slip about Jenny during their conversation.
Are you crazy?
It could work. There are plenty of husband and wife driving teams out there.
And you're never gonna be part of one. Not with Jenny and not with any other woman either. You're a loner, Mark.
Oh, come on, Bud. The least you could do is give it a chance before you stomp all over it.
All right. But the next time you call, you have to let me say I told you so as much as I want.
Okay, sure.
Best of luck, Mark. You're gonna need it.
Mark picked her up in front of her apartment building at Annette and Runningmede in the southwest end of Toronto. Not exactly the best place in the world to be driving an 18-wheeler. Mark hoped Jenny was out in front of her building waiting for him since there was no way he'd be able to park his rig and knock on her door. Luckily, she was there waiting. He stopped out front and waved to her. She ran down to the curb with a backpack bobbing rhythmically on her back.
Hi!
Hey! Hop in.
J- Jenny tossed her backpack onto the seat.
Right after I get my suitcases.
Suitcases?
I've only got three of them. I wanted to be prepared.
For what? World War III?
Then she was gone, off to retrieve the rest of her baggage. When she came back out, she was struggling with three large pieces of luggage.
Oh, kill me.
Mark didn't want to help her, didn't want any of that stuff in his truck. But he'd agreed to take her along, so maybe it would be okay to indulge her this one time. He got out of the truck and carried her bags for her. 5 minutes later, Mark had her stuff packed away as best he could. There was still some room left, but the three pieces of luggage had definitely put a dent in their living space. Mark helped Jenny up into the cab.
There's not much room in here, is there?
Suits me just fine.
Jenny stared at him for a few seconds, then realization hit her like a brick.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is your home, isn't it?
She took a look around the cab as if she were being polite.
But it's fine. I guess it'll just take me a little getting used to.
Mark nodded, put the Peterbilt in gear, and let out the clutch.
So, where are we going?
Winnipeg.
Winnipeg? Why Winnipeg? Why not Florida or California? Couldn't we go there instead?
We could go to those places, but they want the stuff that's on my truck in Winnipeg.
All right, I guess.
Look at it this way. There's not a lot on the highway between here and there, so we'll have plenty of time to talk.
Jenny smiled but said nothing, probably doing her best to be a trooper. Mark headed south to the lake shore, then decided to head west for Highway 427. As he drove, Jenny dialed a few numbers on her cell phone, then listened as if she were picking up her messages. She finished picking up her messages, but didn't say a word to him. Instead, she stared out the window as if something were on her mind.
You're looking good, Jenny.
You too, Mark.
How've you been?
Good. You?
I've been good. You seeing anybody?
No.
Then, after a moment's thought, Jenny shook her head slowly.
Not at the moment, anyway. But why would I be seeing anybody if I'm here with you?
Right. You been working much?
I've been doing a bunch of odd jobs. You know, whatever it takes to make ends meet. You've been doing well, haven't you?
Yeah, I do all right. But I don't have much living expenses since I basically live out of this truck.
How much do you make a year?
What?
I mean, this truck is so well maintained and seems to run great. You must be doing real well for yourself.
Well, I've saved some money, but I'll probably be needing a new truck in a little while, and that'll take care of most of it.
Mark was about to continue when she put up a hand and pulled out her cell phone.
Expecting an important call?
Yeah, you could say that.
Mark didn't understand it. For someone looking forward and trying to make a new life for herself, she sure seemed anchored to her old one.
Any new messages?
Yeah, plenty.
The silence between them was drawn out for miles. Mark was looking forward to getting out of the truck for a while.
You hungry?
Yes, very.
There's a greasy spoon a few kilometers up the road. The burgers are pretty good, and their chili, well, it's good too, but not as good as the burgers.
Burgers? Hamburgers?
Yeah.
Well, that's not what I had in mind for dinner.
Well, what did you have in mind?
I don't know, Swiss Chalet at the very least, something like that.
The burgers are really good.
I can't eat anything that's too fattening.
It's still early. Let's see what's up ahead.
Okay.
That made her happy.
Thank God for small miracles.
Mark had seen husband and wife teams work really well together, seeming to know exactly what the other wanted even before they did. Or else they would compromise, knowing that if one gave in this time, it would be the other's turn the next time around. Obviously, this wasn't the way it was working with Jenny. As he guided his rig past dozens of greasy spoons and mom-and-pop joints, Mark gained a newfound respect for husband and wife teams. There had to be a trust and understanding between two equals for them to work, and it clearly wasn't working here. Mark wasn't sure if he could ever find a woman he could team up with. One thing was for certain, she'd have to be something pretty special even before he agreed to give it another try. It was almost dark by the time they reached Sudbury.
Well?
Maybe there's a Swiss Chalet in Sudbury?
I'm driving a tractor trailer. It's not exactly the best sort of vehicle to be cruising around the city in.
Please.
All right.
They ended up eating at a fancy steak restaurant in Sudbury. The bill coming in at just under $80. Jenny sipped a cup of after-dinner tea.
Which hotel do you usually stay at?
Hotel?
Where else would we be sleeping?
Back of my truck's usually good for me.
But I need a shower, and I need room to try on my nighties, or else I won't know which one I'm in the mood for. Some of my outfits are really hot.
Sure, a hotel room sounds great.
Mark smiled at the irony. He'd hoped it would be like this on the road with Jenny every night, but if this carried on, he'd have a smile on his face and not a penny to his name. The sex had been great. Jenny had been a disappointment in most aspects of their marriage, but he really had to hand it to her in the bedroom. She was everything a man could want and more. Then again, she had had a lot of practice. A lot of practice. Mark was feeling satisfied on this morning, and a little bit tired out too, but pleasantly so. The night had been great, but the trouble was he couldn't lounge around in bed all day reflecting on it. He had to get back onto the road to earn his living. Then night would come, and after 8 hours or so of driving, he'd be dead tired while she'd be all ready to go again. Another night like the last would be nice, but any more than that would probably kill him, or at least send him to an early grave. Sure, it was a great way to go, but it was already 9 o'clock.
Jenny, wake up.
Huh? What?
It's after 9.
Yeah, so?
We've got to get going.
But it's only 9.
Mark jumped out of bed and got changed. Jenny lingered in the bed, trying to sleep, and then grudgingly sliding out of the bed and heading to the bathroom without any clothes on.
What are you doing?
I'm going to take a shower.
But you had a shower last night.
I start every day with a shower.
Jenny closed the bathroom door behind her. Mark thought about taking off his clothes and joining her, but he'd already made a big deal about hitting the road. It would be hypocritical of him to suddenly want to take his time. Half an hour later, she was packed. They left the room.
What are we having for breakfast?
Just a coffee and donuts for me.
But the hotel has a really nice restaurant.
Mark decided it would take less time just to agree with her and get breakfast over with.
On the other hand, bacon and eggs is good too.
Jenny's slow start irritated Mark to the point where everything the woman did grated on Mark's nerves. The way she breathed, in and out, in and out. The way she sat there with 2 feet on the floorboard and an arm on the armrest, like she owns the place. And the way she looked out the window with her head turning left to right on her neck as if there were all sorts of interesting things to look at outside. For crying out loud, it was all so annoying.
Why are we doing this?
Doing what?
This. After all these years, we don't talk to each other, and one day you decide that you want to get back with me. Why?
Because I missed you, and I realized what I had lost, and because, well, I wanted to.
You know, it would be great if you could get your AZ license and we could share the driving duties. You could drive twice as far in half the time and make a lot more money.
The money part sounds good, but I really can't see myself driving a truck.
Then why did you agree to ride with me? I'm not on vacation, you know. I'm working. And if you're with me, you might as well be driving and making yourself useful.
Jenny cast him an innocent smile.
I guess I'm just having trouble making the adjustment to life on a truck. I did drop everything just so I could join you on this ride, so excuse me if I'm not exactly ready to give up all the usual creature comforts for the privilege of living out of a truck for the rest of my life. Last night was great.
Yes, it was.
I want to do it again.
Tough to make money at this job when you spend every night in a hotel.
Without saying a word, Jenny unbuttoned her blouse, ran a finger inside one of her bra cups, and flashed one of her breasts at Mark.
Are you sure I'm not worth it?
Mark was only human.
I think there's a hotel up the highway a bit with pretty reasonable rates.
Mark dropped Jenny off in front of the motel and then headed over to the nearby rest station to refuel his truck. After topping off his tanks, Mark realized that he'd given Jenny his credit card to rent the room. But instead of going back to the motel to chase down Jenny for his card, Mark went through Jenny's purse in search of one of her cards. The purse was on the passenger seat, and her credit cards, several of them, were just inside. On the one hand, he didn't feel right using her card for his fuel. But on the other hand, why not? If they were together again, then they were also sharing expenses. If she wanted to sleep in a motel room each night, then the least she could do was bring for fuel every once in a while. Mark stepped up to the clerk and handed over Jenny's card. The clerk seemed to have trouble getting the card to work. Then he made a phone call and spent a couple of minutes listening very carefully to someone on the other end. The clerk finally returned to the counter.
Is there a problem? Do I have another card? Why?
Without another word, the clerk presented Jenny's card to Mark, then cut it in two with a huge pair of heavy-duty scissors.
What the hell did you do that for?
Do you have another card, sir? Or shall I call the police?
Mark picked up the pieces of Jenny's card and stacked them one on top of the other.
Do you have another card?
No. But I have some cash in my truck.
Mark slipped the pieces of credit card into his pocket and headed back to Motherlode. He kept a few $100 in cash on hand for just such emergencies. As he sat in the truck, counting out bills, Mark noticed Jenny's cell phone sticking out of her open purse. After putting away the cash he didn't need, Mark picked up her phone and dialed her number. When the answering machine kicked in, he punched in the code that accessed her messages.
You have 10 new messages.
You sleep with my husband again! Hell, if you even so much as talk to him again, I'll make you wish you'd never met the son of a bitch!
I found this phone number in my husband's pants. He says it's the number for his accountant. Is that true?
This is CFR Collections. Our records show you're 3 months overdue on your last payment. If you want your card activated, you must make a payment within 3 days or...
This is TD Visa calling. I'm looking for Jenny Dalton. Your account has been suspended with us.
Hello, Jenny McDonald. This is Bud McFallon calling from Suncrest Bank.
And on it went. Message after message of credit companies and disgruntled women wanting either money or their husbands. Mark exited the truck and paid for the fuel, the seed of a plan already germinating in the back of his mind. Mark knocked on the door of the motel room about a half hour later. Jenny opened the door, dressed in a barely there nightgown that did little to cover up her admittedly gorgeous body.
What took you so long?
I needed a lot of gas.
You got a full tank, huh?
Yeah.
And then you can go all night.
Mark slept like a baby until 6. Then he rolled out of bed, quietly packed up his things, and left the room. Mark considered leaving her there, outside of Winnipeg, with nothing more than her credit cards and her luggage, and letting her find her own way home. He also thought about leaving her there stranded, and contacting the woman on the answering machine, the one that wanted Jenny dead, and letting the woman know where to find her. In the end, however, he didn't have the heart to do any of those things to her. He had something better in mind. So he paid for the hotel room, which was the least he could do, and brought all of her luggage in from the truck and left it with the clerk at the front desk. When he was sure Jenny and her belongings were safe, he hopped into Mother Lode and headed west toward Winnipeg. The load didn't have to be at the warehouse until late in the afternoon, so Mark had all the time he needed to find just what he was looking for. Just outside Winnipeg, Mark found a greasy spoon that suited his purposes. It was the kind of place truckers loved, with good food, smiling waitresses, and an informality that suited people who had been on the road for days. It was also full of people having breakfasts that suggested news about the dangers of cholesterol hadn't made it this far up the nation's highways. Plates were brimming with bacon, sausages, eggs, and even more bacon and sausages. This was exactly the sort of place Mark would find the driver he needed to carry out his plan.
Excellent.
And there he was, sitting at a table in the corner, alone, a morning paper in his left hand and a forkful of sausage in his right. Mark made his way over to the man and saw he was wearing a pair of tar-stained jeans. Perfect. His red t-shirt was stretched out across his gut, unable to cover the distance to the top of his pants, and leaving his big fleshy grin between two pieces of clothing. The button on the jeans seemed at a bursting point, and the pants themselves were held in place by a pair of baby blue suspenders. The front of the t-shirt was spotted with fresh grease stains and a couple of splotches of something that might have been last night's pizza.
Mind if I sit down?
The man looked around, obviously wondering why Mark had chosen to sit at his table when there were still plenty of others that were empty.
Yeah, if you won't.
Now sitting across from the man, Mark realized he'd also had a bowl of chili waiting its turn to be eaten. Mark had learned years ago that chili was a food that was best avoided when on the road in the confines of a truck cab, especially if you were riding with someone else. Mark just looked at the steaming bowl of chili and smiled.
I'm Mark Dalton.
Name's Mick. Like the truck, but with an I.
Well, Mick, I've got a little proposition for you.
Hey, I'm not that kind of guy.
Oh, no, nothing like that, Mick. In fact, it's a money deal. Just about opposite to what you're thinking.
Oh, yeah? How much is in it for me?
100?
200.
It was more than he wanted to pay, but it would probably be worth every penny. Maybe even a bargain by the time all was said and done.
Deal.
Jenny stood at the front desk, her head swiveling around on her neck in search of Mark.
The room is already paid for, ma'am.
Great.
But there is a room service charge and a charge for 4 phone calls this morning totaling $57.33.
You said the room is paid.
Well, the room is, yes.
Where's my husband?
The clerk's face was a mask of confusion, and then it suddenly brightened with realization.
Ah, he left you this.
The clerk handed Jenny a letter.
Dear Jenny, learned a bit more about you than you wanted last night. Bad credit and some crazy lady wants to kill you. That sounds like something that might happen to me. Anyway, look to your right. See the big man there standing like a fish out of water? He has money to pay for the rest of your bill, and I've paid him to give you a ride back to Toronto.
Jenny looked around and spotted the big dirty man standing by the front door. He waved back at her.
If you refuse to ride with him, he'll gladly take my money and drive to Toronto without you. I suggest you ride with him. He could use the company, and the road he'll be taking back to the city is straight and narrow. And that's the kind of road I think you really need to be on, before we ever think about getting back together again. All the best, Mark.
Oh, no!
Hey, baby. You ready to go?
If you enjoyed this Mark Dalton adventure, be sure to check out next month's episode featured on the following action-packed titles. Deathlands number 81, Desert Kings. First Mountain Man number 10, Preacher's Justice. And Doomsday Warrior number 14, American Death Orbit.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.